This coming week, the Supreme Court of New Jersey will consider an appeal of a decision in 2008 that found Vontae Skinner guilty of attempted murder. On what evidence? Inconsistent eyewitness testimony and rap lyrics written by Skinner that spoke of violence and life on the street. The lyrics did not reference the victim or any details of the crime. In fact, they were composed before the shooting in question, but they were still the central piece of evidence that put him behind bars for a term of 30 years. Professor Charis Kubrin studies the surprisingly common use of rap lyrics as evidence and co-wrote an op-ed in the New York Times last week called Rap Lyrics on Trial. Charis, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you.
I'm no lawyer, but I have seen many, many episodes of Law & Order, and it seems to me that this is the very definition of prejudicial testimony. How did a trial judge ever agree to allow this as evidence?
The character evidence argument, that's technically not the way in which they're allowed to introduce the evidence, but they're allowed to talk about the evidence as the defendant's knowledge, motive, or identity with respect to the crime. But the way it comes across to the jurors and everyone else involved is that this is sort of character evidence.
To the casual listener, I guess it's not an insane leap to imagine that a rap lyric may actually portray actual events, right?
Because that is correct.
Part and parcel of a rap artist's appeal is this whole notion of living the street life that usually he, is rapping about.
Correct.
But nobody thought Johnny Cash killed a man in Reno just to watch him die. And what may seem logical does not necessarily make it credible evidence.
People that listen to rap music generally know that a lot of this is marketing pose, that the very definition of gangster rap is to be over-the-top, explicit, violent, misogynistic. Unfortunately, people in the courtroom, including most jurors, themselves have no idea because they're not avid listeners or they don't necessarily appreciate the genre. Judges, prosecutors, others involved treat it as autobiographical confessions because the assumption is that what rap lyrics are is in fact these rhymed confessions.
I think the elephant in the room here is not only the legal question of what constitutes admissible evidence of state of mind, but race baiting. It sounds to me as if it's very easy to prey on the fears and the stereotypes in the minds of jurors by reading aloud some truly deplorable lyrics from a very violent rap song.
Absolutely. And Eric Nielsen and I, in our op-ed, discuss one study by Stuart Fishoff that shows how prejudicial and biased perceptions of rap music, in addition to who makes the music, and here we're talking about young, mostly minority men, right, from lower socioeconomic status, how all of that sort of combines to create perceptions that this individual is dangerous. And there's other research that has shown that when violent lyrics are identified as rap music compared to, say, country music, they're seen as more threatening and more problematic, and individuals are seen as more blameworthy and culpable than when it's attributed to another form of music.
How did you get into this particular subline of legal scholarship?
Well, I was contacted back in 2011 by a lawyer who had come across one of my studies that did a content analysis of gangster rap songs, asking if I would be interested in reviewing the facts of a case involving Olutosin Oduwole, who was an aspiring rapper that was being charged with making a terroristic threat. And basically what happened was in 2007, Oduwole's car ran out of gas, leading him to abandon it on the Edwardsville campus of Southern Illinois University, where he was a student. And when the school authorities found his car, among the many items they retrieved was this piece of paper that was crumpled and lodged between the seats. And on one side of the piece of paper were some scribbled rap lyrics, not surprising because he was an aspiring rapper, that everybody agreed were rap lyrics, including the state. And on the other side were some rap lyrics as well, followed by six lines of text at the bottom of the paper, which the state claimed represented a threat. And Tosin, which is his stage name, and his lawyers argued represented the beginning stages of a rap song.
These lines of text were not benign.
They were not
benign. It's not surprising that the police were alarmed. Can you tell me what they said?
Yes. The six lines of text read something along the lines of, send $2 to a PayPal account, and if this account doesn't reach $500,000, then a murderous rampage similar to the VT shooting will occur at another university, followed by, "This is not a joke." And for obvious reasons, they did a search of the apartment, found more notebooks filled with lyrics than he was charged with making terroristic threats. So I was called in to review these notebooks and reviewed hundreds of pages of Odewale's lyrics and came to the conclusion in the context of all of the evidence that there was a strong possibility that these were the beginnings of rap lyrics for a number of reasons. I explained that one of the very things we know about gangster rappers is they use this genre convention called an intro and an outro. And these are often non-rhyming words that set up the rap that's about to occur. And one of the things I discovered reviewing his lyrics is that Tosin liked to use intros and outros a lot in his raps. And so I argued that this may be an example of an intro or an outro, because one of the issues is, well, this doesn't rhyme, therefore it can't be a rap lyric.
What did the jury conclude? That Tosin was an aspiring rapper, or that he was an aspiring extortionist and mass murderer?
They found him guilty.
Now, it is entirely possible that some of the criminal defendants on whose behalf you have testified really are bad actors, mm-hmm. and they really did do the crimes of which they were accused. But it's one thing to have done something and another thing to have it proven in a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear here, you don't even want the actually guilty to be convicted based on irrelevant evidence.
Exactly. The point is, if these guys have done this, you need to find proper traditional evidence to prove that in a court. You cannot have highly prejudicial evidence, which is not central to the case, which is irrelevant to the case, as the defining factor of the case which leads this individual to be found guilty. And rap music, no matter how violent the imagery or how misogynistic the views expressed or how offensive you find it, is constitutionally protected speech, which has First Amendment protections and should not be used in courts.
Sharris, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Sharris E. Kubrin is an associate professor of criminology, law, and society at the University of California, Irvine.